Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Bretall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
The comics we'll be talking about in this episode were originally released on January 7th, 2009, so only 5 days between those two shipments due to the holidays delaying the previous one. Before we get going, I want to give a quick shout-out to Sean Whalen over at Raging Bullets. And the actual shout-out I want to do is, damn you, Sean. And the reason for that is because of our first pick, which is DC's, actually from Wildstorm, imprint of DC, The Authority number 6. And, Bob, you know how sometimes you've said you've had to catch up on a half dozen or something issues to read something?
Yep.
I think I've got you beat. I did, I think, 166 issues to catch up on the Wildstorm universe. And a lot of that was, kind of made possible by, not a lot, but some, by Sean Whalen. Because I had dived out of the Wildstorm universe right after Captain Atom blew it up and rebuilt it.
And your sanity is still intact after reading 166 Wildstorm issues?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. That was Flaming Carrot's origin. He read 500 comic books in a sitting and went insane. Something like that.
I did it in a few different sittings, because it's a lot of comics. But right after I had gotten out of the Wildstorm universe, Sean had gotten the variant copies of Wildcats, Wetworks, and Midnighter number 1, and then gave them to me. It's like, here, you can get back into Wildstorm now. It's like, so, it took a while, but I'm now, you know, back into the Wildstorm universe, or what's left of it, and read through pretty much everything that I'm aware of, you know, everything from the various Authority series, including the one that lasted 2 issues, one of which didn't even have the Authority in it, Authority Prime, Casey Blue, which kind of is or isn't in the Wildstorm universe, but I read it anyways, Deathblow, 9 issues of that, 25 issues of Gen 13, the Grifter Midnighter miniseries, A Man Called Kev, Midnighter, which actually I thought was really good. Midnighter, I would say, was one of the highlights of the whole thing. New Dynamics. Now, we'd read and talked about the first issue. I finally reread that and finished off the miniseries.
Midnighter was one of the only Wildstorm universe titles I was actually reading. Casey Blue, I read that. It was okay, but I saw no connection to the Wildstorm universe.
It was one that I think they could either put in or take out as they saw fit. To me, it didn't have a clear distinction either way. It was not clearly in it or out.
So, did you do what I asked and, confirm for me if I was just having a horrible misremembering or if there was a huge discontinuity between the end of the Authority number 5 and the beginning of number 6?
What I did is I read all the way up through, Number of the Beast, which was when they kind of did their apocalypse-type thing. And then for the 4 titles, I went essentially chronologically. So instead of reading all of the Authority stuff back-to-back and then all the Gen 13 or whatever, I went 1 issue of each. And the reason for that is because of the backup stories they've been doing for the last 5 or 6 months that had, a 4-page thing of, first Lynch as it went from, Wildcats to the Authority to Gen 13 to Stormwatch. And issue 5 of the Authority kind of, had a nice little, ending or whatever. This, with issue 6, it doesn't pick up right on the heels of it, but follows along in continuity, I think, fine. But it also follows along in stuff they were setting up in Stormwatch PhD since that, series restarted after World's End.
Because I'm not reading any of those things, and I picked up issue number 6, and I felt like I had walked in on the middle of a movie. I didn't know what was going on.
What exactly, other than the Stormwatch showing up, surprised you?
Well, I thought that the last thing I read in the Authority was them having that big fight, and I don't know who this guy on the bike is. Stormwatch shows up. I don't know. Maybe I'm just not that into Wildstorm, which you are after inflicting 166 issues of it on yourself. But I couldn't follow anything that was going on in this issue. And I found that I didn't really even care. It appears to be the middle of some kind of Wildstorm crossover. The backup at the end of it, which, by the way, doesn't have any introduction to it. It doesn't have any credits on it. And it it tells you that it's continued in Gen 13, number 26, makes no indication of where it is continued from.
I agree they could have been doing some of that a little bit better. I particularly had that issue when I was reading the Armageddon one-shots. I started in alphabetical order, having no better plan and no indication on the covers where to start, and realized that one or two of them I should have read before I'd started with Gen 13. But from there, it's continued in. But they need to be, I think, at the beginning of stories that are kind of continuations of or in a sequence, telling you, you know, if you haven't read this, you might want to go do that. Now, the backup, yeah, they should have had credits. They should have done a little better introduction on that. But, I mean, those things are, what, 4 or 5 pages? So they're a little tight on space. Again, no excuse for no credits, but you got to figure that's going to come a little bit more in the middle of the action and stuff.
Well, I mean, you know, something in the gutter that says continued from, you know?
Or... No, I agree. There's always room for that. There's no question about that. As for the main story itself, though, everything that's going on with the Authority is the same status quo they left the last issue with and have been going for this entire run. And there was nothing in the Authority to say, oh, Stormwatch was going to show up, but that was the whole point, because Stormwatch had been literally hiding their continued existence and stuff from the Authority. So for somebody just reading the Authority, yeah, Stormwatch showing up should be a surprise. For somebody following both sides, this was something that Stormwatch had been talking about, should we do this or not, for issues and, you know, for many months. You know, the last thing that happened in the Authority is they had the outbreak of the Warhol virus or whatever, and were afraid the engineer had been infected. So, you know, that had just been taken care of, she'd just been released from the quarantine, and tensions were running high, then this issue comes in. So I didn't think it was a complete disconnect at all.
I guess my observation is that it's difficult to read a single Wildstorm universe book. And when I say Wildstorm universe, I mean the characters that live in the Wildstorm universe, not just something under the Wildstorm imprint. I have no problem with reading Ex Machina or Storming Paradise or any other book in the Wildstorm imprint that has nothing to do with these Wildstorm characters. But I have decided that I can't just read the Authority. I have no interest in Stormwatch. I have no interest in Gen 13, any of those other books. Since I'm not reading any of those, I am going to not read Authority either.
I mean, I can understand that. I personally think that's a little harsh. I mean, yes, Stormwatch crossed over here. Yes, they're trying to do a little bit of cross-continuity or whatever, but I certainly didn't take this as a you had to go read Stormwatch to understand this, and I think by and large, while there's a benefit to reading all four titles, I don't think you have to. I think Gen 13 is standing alone pretty well. I think Wildcats is doing that. Overall, I think both Stormwatch and the Authority are. But, I mean, they're in a post-apocalyptic universe with things going on, and they're all touching on that, so it makes sense for there to be some crossover and some discussion like this.
I don't know how objective you can be about that after reading 166 Wildstorm books in a short period of time.
Well, I would think it gives me quite a bit more data to work from having just read all of that.
Well, it gives you a lot of data to work from, but it doesn't give you the data of reading only one of them and feeling a bit lost and not getting anything out of it, because you have all that other stuff in your head.
No, and I understand that, but particularly in this case, having rotated through the various titles, Wildcat, Authority, Gen 13, Stormwatch, issue by issue, and not feeling that any of the stuff going on in any of the other books pertained to whatever I was reading at the time, other than the backup feature by and large, I do think they stand alone fairly well. So, I mean, Gen 13 has had nothing to do with Stormwatch, Authority, or Wildcats.
Maybe I just don't care about this stuff.
Now that, I think, is a very valid point, because
I used to love the Authority, okay? I used to love it. I loved it when Ellis was writing it. I loved it when they were doing interesting stuff with it. Abnett and Lanning here, I can barely believe this is the same guys who are writing Nova and Guardians of the Galaxy, because I love that stuff that they do over in Marvel, and this stuff, I just don't care.
No, I can totally understand that.
I don't care.
This is a weak spot for the Authority. This is not their strongest point by a long shot, but frankly, since they botched the relaunch in 2006, the Authority's kind of been floundering. You know, the Secret History of the Authority for Jack Hawksmoore was okay at best, and even that's being a bit charitable. And the whole World's End stuff overall is not something that really clicks with me thinking, wow, I want to read, you know, tons of this. this. You know, it's competently told, it's entertaining, but it's not something that I think is brilliant. And they've already set the seeds of undoing it. You know, out of all the Wildstorm stuff I've read, you know, Wetworks, Welcome to Tranquility, Stormwatch, Wildcats, the Revelation stuff, Worldstorm, Armageddon, all that. You know, I would say, again, Midnighter was a high point. I really enjoyed Number of the Beast. I thought it was a bad name for the title, but to me, that was one of the high points for the whole run. You know, there was some good stuff in Welcome to Tranquility. Wetworks, take it or leave it. But, you know, really, they got all this trouble to essentially resurrect Gen 13, and then, oh, let's put him in a post-apocalyptic setting. To me, that was a questionable move. Now, I applaud the risk they're taking of, hey, let's blow up the universe because we can do that here where we can't do that in the DC universe or whatever, but it makes it a lot harder for these titles to be relatable and accessible on that score. While they're telling some interesting stuff here, I can totally see a lot of people just saying, hey, this isn't something I need to be reading. Having read all the Wildstorm stuff, I would say overall it was okay. I'm not surprised by how it's selling. You know, it's not selling that well because there's better things out there.
Yeah. My conclusion is I'm not buying any Wildstorm books at all anymore that have anything to do with these Wildstorm characters.
I can understand that. They've broken the faith.
If Warren Ellis came back to do a new run of The Authority that was kind of like standalone, I might read that, but this stuff that they're doing right now, I just have zero interest in it.
I can understand that. What rating would you give this, or dare I ask?
Uno. The Number of the Beast, we'll call it. Number one. That's not a good number when we're on the 5-point scale.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I mean, in terms of clearly that's your views and stuff.
And it's just my enjoyment of it. I mean, I didn't enjoy it at all. The backup was completely wasted on someone who's not reading all the books that it's continued from.
Totally. I completely agree with that. For those backups to be the least bit meaningful, you've got to read all four.
The art was somewhat outside of my sweet spot on art that I like. It just, I thoroughly did not enjoy this issue. And I liked it a lot less than I remember liking previous issues of even this Authority series.
Really? Because I thought both in terms of the art, the dystopic nature of it, the shadow of their former glory kind of a thing, all of that's been in it since this series started. So I'm a little surprised by that.
I don't know what it is about this issue that just rubbed me the wrong way, but something did.
Well, I can see where early on you get that splash page and suddenly Stormwatch is there and you're like, who cares? I mean, I would see that would turn you off the entire issue.
And it's all just previously they were fighting outdoors. They were more characters that I knew who they were. I don't know. This, it's like all like apparently inside the carrier. It's all dark. The coloring is terrible.
But again, this whole run has been that way.
Yeah. I had actually decided to stop getting this after number five. And I didn't have this one ordered, so I went out to the shop and I bought this one. So it just reinforces my decision to have stopped getting this series.
Well, the one thing I am kind of curious about with where they're going on the Wildstorm stuff is we haven't quite hit the Armageddon flash forward point for these titles yet, but I feel that we're kind of close. And I'm wondering if they're going to, you know, keep going with this stuff, or if Lynch's plan to kind of flip the timeline back or whatever his plan is going to come to fruition. I do like how they're pulling some of the older characters back into the fold, the original Backlash, Cybernary, stuff like that through the backup stories. Again, I really enjoyed the Number of the Beast stuff. And with the Authority, I'm really interested on kind of how they're pulling the Monarchy back in and taking what had been old, forgotten corners of the Wildstorm universe and kind of dusting them off. So if you liked the old Wildstorm stuff and you're willing to go with a very dystopic version of it, this is worth checking out. If that's not your cup of tea, and I can totally understand where it wouldn't be, or you simply got enough on your pull list as it is, I do think the Wildstorm stuff is things you can safely pass on.
Even when I was enjoying it, this stuff was middle-of-the-pack stuff.
Yeah.
And in the economy that we're in now where people are, like, trimming back and keeping only the best stuff, it's like if you're looking for lots of other stuff to buy after you've bought all the stuff that you really enjoy, you know, this is maybe get a slot for you. For me, it's like in the bottom 20% of comics that I would read.
To me, pretty much both this issue fell into a 3, as did most of the Wildstorm stuff, again with a few highlights. But overall, it's just another comic, and to me, I think that's part of what's killing the Wildstorm brand right now is it used to be really good comics, and now they're just regular stuff, you know? So they need to do something to rehabilitate the Wildstorm brand, and they need to do it quick. And I suspect that the Wildstorm universe itself isn't going to be around for all that much longer. It wouldn't surprise me if they reduce it to a single title at some point. Now, that may be a few years down the line, but something needs to change.
So on the value front, you had 22 pages for $2.99, 13.6 a page. If you take out the completely worthless backup, that brings you up to 18 pages for $2.99, so it's 16.6 cents per page.
And I would agree that the backup feature, you've got to kind of treat as...
Read all of their books.
Yeah. If you don't pay for the other books, you're not getting the value for those pages. I agree with that. Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Indeed.
It is Punisher number one. It's part of the Dark Reign stuff.
A good story, but I'll just make the observation that I thought I couldn't hate the Sentry any more than I already did until I saw what he did in this issue.
What did he do that set you off?
The whole Dark Reign event could have been over before it started if we would have let Frank do his job.
Yeah, I mean, I saw this whole thing as a Punisher versus Superman story.
Yeah, I'm just saying, it's like on a humorous note, what the Sentry does here, you know, what Frank was trying to do and what the Sentry stopped from happening, that would have just kept us from having Dark Reign inflicted on us for the next year if he would have succeeded.
Well, and talk about how out of character this is for the Sentry to, one, do anything, and two, he's not sitting here, you know, whining the entire time.
Yeah, it actually, you know, aside from that, which is more of a humorous note, it's just Sentry was handled better than I've seen him handled in almost anywhere. Basically, he was just handled as if he was Superman.
I mean, it's essentially replace Sentry with Superman, Norman with Lex, and Punisher with Deadshot. And this is a DC book. You know what I mean? Everything, the characters almost fit more there than in the Marvel stuff, which is ironic. Yeah, Sentry just seemed very out of character. It was an entertaining matchup between the two, but the part that stuck in my mind the most, flip to the staple, and on the right-hand page, the last three words, to be continued, that's right, folks, this is a $3.99 book, and the story ends at the staple. I'm like, wow.
Well, that is page 22 of the story, to be fair. So you do get a full 22-page story. They've added the extra buck because they add a whole bunch of text pages of the Punisher saga at the end of this book to fill out the thing. And let me do a quick count here.
They have more promo type pages in this than story pages. They had an editorial page, a next issue page, 13 pages for the Punisher saga, a page for the trade reading list for the Punisher, 6-page preview for Agents of Atlas, a Dark Avengers ad, and a Black Panther ad. 24 pages of arguably just promotional junk versus 22 pages of story.
Well, I kind of... Here's my problem with the Punisher. Reading the Punisher saga, which they've got basically the cover to it, and then 12 pages of text with little drop-in art from various comic stories he's been in. Basically, they go over like every really terrible usage of the Punisher that's ever occurred in the Marvel Universe. And I read through this. I read the whole thing. And I'm like, oh, geez, I forgot about that. That was terrible, wasn't it? You know, it's like, oh, my God. That was bad. And it just, at the end of the day, I come down, you know, it's like, okay, here's one I'm going to read. After defeating the drug-dealing family, Castle was again pulled into supernatural situations when Doctor Strange recruited him as a secret defender. Alongside Namorita and Sleepwalker, Castle fought the demonic construct Roadkill, whose fictional persona was even more dedicated to vengeance than Castle. Castle protected innocence from another construct, the catchphrase spouting Eradicator 6, and then tried to acquire Cord Mather's phalanx armor, but Mather decided to use it as a vigilante, cutting himself off from his own family. And it's like you're reading this and you're like, wow. You know, that was... Perfect description of some of the lame stories they were telling in the 90s. I think that probably happened. But the Punisher does not work in the Marvel Universe for the most part. part.
No, and I can see that. But for me, as much as I liked this sort of a thing in the Ghost Rider issue we talked about, I felt it fell far short of the mark here. Now, partially because they seemed to be pulling out random panels from the comics they were talking about. The art was fairly washed out in most of them. The writing of this was, I think, kind of weak. And I really would have appreciated having title and issue type footnotes for where the hell did this travesty occur.
Well, I agree with you on that. And again, I'll go back to they're recapping the Punisher's career, but they're recapping mostly his stories where he interacts with other Marvel characters. And those, to me, have always been the weakest Punisher stories. And, you know, there was a period of time there in the 90s when he was crossing over with everybody. He was the Wolverine of the day, and you couldn't open a Marvel book without Punisher doing some kind of a crossover into it. And he had like three different books running at the same time, I think.
Yeah, no, I remember all that, but I think that's why they did this, was to establish what happened in his Marvel continuity versus what's happening outside of that in the Max titles.
Right. No, I understand. And all I'm saying is that it just really drove home to me how extremely weak, in my mind, his Marvel Universe appearances have been versus the kind of non-Marvel hero continuity stuff, which I thought were all of the best Punisher stories.
No, I can totally see that.
With the exception of some of the early stuff when he was crossing over with Daredevil, you know, that stuff was good. But, you know, sticking him into, you know, the different kind of Secret Wars and
Power Pack
and Cloak and Dagger and the Wolverine crossover of the month, and when he's fighting with Cable or Doctor Doom or Monster Island or any of this other kind of nonsense, these were just not good usages of the Punisher character and were really just there because the Punisher was selling books. And, you know, it's like hitting you in the face with this. And what's actually funny to me is when you get to the reading chronology,
mm-hmm.
in the back of like all the best Punisher stuff, you know, it's all the Punisher Max stuff, which none of that is covered in this. You've got, you know, the Punisher War Journal, some of the stuff there, the Circle of Blood with, you know, the Stephen Grant, Mike Zeck series, you know, a lot of the stuff here, including the Marvel Knights stuff, is all really good Punisher stuff, but it's none of the stuff that was recapped here. So my recommendation to someone who wants to read Punisher stuff is you go to this page here, you get the Circle of Blood hardcover, you go down to the Marvel Knights section, then you skip over to the Punisher Max section and you skip all that other stuff. But that's my take on the Punisher. For me, I like Rick Remender. I think he did a good job of telling this story, but the Punisher in the Marvel Universe, it really, really comes down to he goes around killing mobsters and things like that. He just doesn't fit with superheroes because just intrinsically, superheroes are not supposed to like guys who go around putting bullets in people's heads. And that's what Punisher does. That's his character. And the Sentry, he can fly faster than a speeding bullet. We see here on the first opening pages, there is no way the whole rest of the story even could happen because he would just zip in, grab the Punisher, have him in a cell in Rikers, and it would all happen in less than 3 seconds.
Yeah, the entire thing where Frank, you know, jumps off the ledge or whatever. I mean, Sentry should have, you know, had him caught and in Rikers before
he was halfway to the ground.
Yep. No, I agree with that. I mean, I thought this was a good story. I mean, not a brilliant story, but not bad, given the type of story it was trying to tell. And I agree, it's a character that, sure, he came out of the Marvel Universe originally, but he doesn't really fit there. The art was okay, but, you know, nothing great. I felt this was more of a chapter one of an opening arc than a really solid first issue. It wasn't a bad first issue, but it didn't hook me. It didn't make me think, oh, wow, this is going to be a great series. You know, I'm a bit curious of who Frank's new best friend is, but really not all that curious. And really, you know, while they put in some extra stuff with the Punisher saga and all that other crap, it felt like more of the issue was devoted to in-house promotion than to the actual story I'm paying for, and that rubbed me the wrong way. Now, that's no reflection on the creative team, of course. That's purely an editorial decision. But if this had been a $2.99 book with 22 pages and stuff, I probably wouldn't have had that kind of reaction to it. But again, hitting the staple and then the to be continued, that doesn't work well for me. me.
Well, I didn't mind the fact, well, I won't say that. I minded the fact that we got the Punisher saga mostly because it rubbed the lameness of all these Punisher stories in my face.
Well, and by not having titles and issue numbers or trade references or anything, if somebody is excited of, oh, wow, I want to read that story, they don't know where it is to go get it. And particularly when you put in the here's the trades after that, you know, there should have been some kind of connection between the two.
Or alternatively, so they could say, ooh, I want to know which issues to avoid like the plague when I'm filling in my Marvel collection.
I think that's why they did it the way they did, though.
It's like, oh my lord, some of these things. Punisher and Power Pack.
Now, certainly for fans of the Punisher, I think they'll like this. It's not a bad story, but I'm not inherently a Punisher fan. So for me, this got a 3. I thought it was competent, but again, didn't really hook me.
I also gave it a 3. I mean, it was an okay story, but again, there's only so much you can do with the Punisher in the Marvel Universe, and I just don't think he fits.
What was the price per page? How'd that work out?
Well, you know, it was really 22 pages of story for $3.99. I'm not going to count this Punisher saga. What was it? 12 or 13? I think it was 12 pages of Punisher saga story that you got.
I wouldn't call it a story. That was pure recap.
Well, recap, whatever it was, it was 12 pages with kind of a cover image. So the 22 pages of story you got for $3.99 brings it to 18.1 cents per page.
Yeah.
So pretty pricey for the new Punisher content you're getting.
Well, and to me, I put recaps like this a step below reprints, because you're not even getting sequential art here, you know, with the Punisher saga stuff. Disappointing.
I think they would have been better served making it just a regular 22-page comic for $2.99, but, you know, they knew a number one issue, Punisher, it's going to sell a lot, and by slapping a $3.99 price tag on it, they're going to make more money. And that's an editorial decision or a marketing decision, not anything to do with Rick Remender. You know, Rick Remender, if I took his story on its own, it's a high 3, let's say, to me.
I can see that.
But it kind of gets pulled down by the whole package, you know, of the comic to like a low 3, you know, bordering on a 2, mostly because we got, you know, charged $3.99 for essentially the 22-page story.
Pretty much everything I would consider a major negative on the issue was editorial problems in terms of the value, the recap, all that kind of stuff. The story I thought was good. Again, it still didn't hook me, and part of it's the Punisher versus Superman, Superman ought to win aspect of it. But for what it was trying to do, I thought it did a decent job.
Well, you know, carrying on the Superman analogy, it's kind of like any time Superman fought, like, you know, the Toy Man or some other regular guy, it was like the same thing. It's like he shouldn't have this much trouble fighting this schmo, this regular human being.
Yeah.
So moving now into the last comic of the week, we've got Shrapnel, Aristia Rising from Radical Comics. What do you think of this one, John?
You know, on the one hand, I thought in a couple of places the art was a little dark, a little hard to make out. But aside from that, I thought this was a great story. It was a solid issue. And it kind of read like the first 30 minutes or so of a summer sci-fi blockbuster movie. And I mean that in all the right ways. They had solid characterization. They had good action sequences. They have a well-developed narrative universe. And I thought this was a lot of fun. It was a good, entertaining story. It's gotten me interested in what's going on. And I mean, part of that is they just had a lot more space to work with here, and I don't think they wasted any of it, because this was what, 48 pages of story?
It was 48 pages of story for $1.99. That is 4.1 cents per page. I don't think we've seen that kind of bang for the buck in quite a long time.
Yeah. Well, and Radical's really good about doing that on first issues. You know, I commend them on that. This is something that they could have easily charged $2.99 for, $3.99, heck, probably even $4.99 or maybe a little more, particularly given the length of it. But they didn't. And I think that's going to actually make them, you know, more money in the long run than they would have.
I hope people try it out. I mean, the thing is that I read this, and I think they made a really good decision on going to 48 pages, because looking at just the first 22 pages or so of this, I didn't have enough of the story that I was totally hooked on it. But by the time I got to the end of the story chunk that they told in the first issue, they really had me. And I'm like, okay, I want to see the rest of this series.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Having the extra space really, you know, helped them a lot. And, you know, it's the kind of thing, if you get people hooked on that first issue, they're going to stay with the book, or at least most of them will. I mean, there's standard attrition and stuff. But this, you know, to me, I felt by the time I was done with this, I had read the equivalent almost of a regular, you know, mini three-issue miniseries from some publishers, all in the pages of
more things happened, and, you know, you got more pages and stuff than you'd normally do get in a whole mini series. So you're right,
you know. And of course the art is beautiful. Again, there are a couple of places where, you know, it would have been nice if it was a little better illuminated, but nature of the beast, some of this is happening at night, some of this is happening in space, that kind of thing. So it fit what it was trying to tell. I mean, you know, I see stuff like this, and I think Radical is really making a lot of good decisions, both in terms of how they're packaging their titles, the fact they're limiting in the number of titles they're doing at any one time. And I kind of, you know, equate this to more of a sharpshooter mentality than either a skeet or shotgun mentality that a lot of publishers have. Because it seems at times, particularly with Marvel and DC, they just toss a whole slew of titles out there to see what gets shot down, whereas I think Radical is really picking and choosing the comics that they put out there very carefully and making some, you know, smart decisions in how they do that.
Yeah, I mean, and just giving a recap of what actually this is about. So it's set in the future, I'm assuming. The solar system has been colonized, and Venus, I'm going to characterize Venus as the Switzerland of the solar system. There's the kind of oppressive government that has been taken various places over, and Venus is one of these neutral territories that is sort of the last bastion of freedom. It looks like genetic engineering is going on, so you've got some class differentiation between purebred or just normal humans and people who are, you know, genetically manipulated to be a little more, you know, quote unquote perfect. But on Venus, the regular people are supposed to have equal rights, and they don't looks like they don't have those equal rights in other parts of the solar system. And at a point in the story here, that other government shows up at Venus and says, "Hey, surrender. We're taking you over." And this is now going to be the story of these guys who are fighting for their independence from this against the Marine Corps. And the story's focusing on this woman who appears to have been in the Marines at some point. Now she's living on Venus. She's highly competent. We see some nice examples of that that are worked into the story in a good way when she's working with that asteroid mining thing with the two guys. So we know that she knows what she's doing. She's highly competent. And then she's going to get pulled into this fight. And we're going to, you know, these people are wearing the big mecha armor type fighting suits. She knows how to pilot those. And, you know, so this is kind of a war story. It's a, you know, underdog struggle against the, you know, the big bad oppressive government thing. We've got the mecha. It just hits a lot of really nice themes. If you like this kind of sci-fi, it hit me in the right place a lot, and I really, really like this issue.
Yeah, I mean, it's a nice blend of sci-fi, space action, adventure with a grounding in a certain degree of realism. You know, they've got to wear space suits. These are not just magic technology. There's the way the robots are designed looks believable. And I mean, the whole political thing where, like you were saying, the big government comes to Venus and says, we're taking you over, you know, and just the gall of doing that I thought was great. It's a really fun series. It's got a good blend of, like I said, characterization, action, and a very interesting and believable universe. So I'm definitely, you know, curious to see where they go with this. And it's something I would recommend for, you know, anybody who likes a good summer, you know, sci-fi blockbuster movie.
And just the political aspect of it, you know, it's like when I'm looking at the one thing here, when the Marine guy comes and asks Venus to surrender, the president of Venus says, "How can you butcher millions of innocent people for the sake of an expansionist foreign policy?" And the response is, "The strong do what they can and the weak suffer what they must." That's, I think people can, I don't want to get too political. I think there are parallels to things on Earth right now that are happening with certain large company countries enforcing their will on other people that not necessarily. And it's happened historically too. I mean, even, you know, this is not something out of line. It's like when the British Empire would like go in and, you know, stomp on all kinds of places. And this happens, you know, you get expansionism. And then ultimately, that's going to crumble in on itself, and it'll fall back.
Yeah. For me, this gets a high 4, and I'll be honest, I'm not entirely sure why I don't want to give it a 5, because it comes pretty damn close. This is one that I definitely want to see where the story continues with, and I highly recommend it to people.
I gave it a 5.
I can see that. And again, the value on this thing, you know, 48 pages of story, you know, plus, you know, what, 2 or 3 pages of backup ads or whatever?
Yeah, not a single ad during the course of the story. Page 1 through page 48, straight through. Then they've got a house ad for issue number 2, showing really nice Arthur Soydam cover there. They've got a little page about Radical being at New York Comic Con, and then they've got a house ad for City of Dust and a house ad for Hotwire, which are the other two Radical series that are running right now. And then they've got a picture for the hardcovers of Hercules and Caliber. Now, this actually I might mention because those are a really damn good price. You've got all 5 issues of Hercules and all 5, or, you know, they're 2 separate books, but Hercules and Caliber, each one a 5-issue series, all 5 issues in hardcover, full color, $19.95. And with the discount you can get in a lot of places, that's a darn good value.
Yeah, yeah. No, and again, they're pricing things competitively, and I respect that. So, and those were both very good series.
Yeah. So if you didn't pick up Hercules or Caliber, I would highly recommend going out and picking up one of these hardcovers, especially at this price point. I mean, this is the kind of thing that Marvel or DC would be selling for $29.95 at least, I think.
I would agree with that, yeah.
So I think that's it for this week. What did you? How many books did you get?
I got 29 comics and 1 trade, and that trade was the Showcase Presents Strange Adventures, Volume 1.
I also got Strange Adventures. I got 28 comics. I also got a manga, Kurosagi Corpse Delivery Service, number 8, and the DC Universe by Neil Adams, Volume 1. And this was a really nice package. It's about 180 pages of comics if you take out the foreword and such. But it's, you know, they've already done the Batman by Neil Adams stuff. So this is the first volume of some of the other stuff he's done. They've got the 4 issues of Teen Titans that he, or the 3 issues rather of Teen Titans that he did. It's got an Elongated Man story out of Detective Comics. It's really interesting. He did just a couple of pages in Justice League 94, and they just put the Neil Adam pages from that issue of Justice League in here.
Really?
Yeah. And they have a Superman backup story from Superman in 1972. They have the pencils reproduced of a story that was never published in a comic, but it saw print in the Amazing World of DC Comics special edition number 1 in February of 76. They've got those public service ads that they used to run. Justice for All Includes Children, kind of like, you know, what kids should expect is their kind of rights, you know, kind of things. These were PSAs that were in the comics. They have those that Neil Adams illustrated. They've got then some of his war stories. They've got some Sergeant Rock stories, some Enemy Ace stories, you know, a War That Time Forgot story with big monsters and things like that. All really nice stuff. If you like Neil Adams, this is a really nice package. And if you ever buy back issues back in this era, the Neil Adams issues are always like 50% more than any of the surrounding issues. You know, it's like you'll have Our Army at War running along, and it'll be like an issue's like, you know, $6 or something for the back issue. And then the Neil Adams one will be, you know, 10 or 12. So he really is a standout artist, and this is a really nice package. I'm glad to see that they're doing something like this. And then beyond that, I got 2 the classic Marvel lead figures. I got Moon Knight and Deathlok, the Geoforce action figure from the Justice League line. That was the one that I picked from that series because he was the only character I didn't already have an action figure of. You know, the other ones, I don't even remember, but they're probably, you know, more Supermans and Batmans and stuff. And then I got the Mouse Guard role-playing game hardcover.
Ah, interesting. I thought I had ordered that Geo-Force one, but I didn't get it this week. So maybe it'll be in my next shipment, or maybe I'm misremembering and didn't order it. But I thought I had put that one down because I didn't have one of him either.
But good week. Good week of comics.
Yeah.
Actually, I love Shrapnel, but I liked a lot of the other books I read a lot more than I liked The Punisher and The Authority, so...
Yeah, well, again, the whole post-apocalyptic thing for Wildstorm was an interesting decision, so we'll see how well that pans out for them. What did I read that was particularly good this time around?
I thought the Spider-Man issue was pretty good, with Molten Man.
I thought that was good. It's one of those where I'm running hot and cold on some of the Spider-Man stuff. I thought the Faces of Evil Grundy was actually better than I had expected, but didn't go in with high expectations.
I didn't care that much for it at all.
It's got me interested about the miniseries. I'll give it that.
It got me to decide that I have no interest in the miniseries.
Ah.
An opposite effect.
Final issue of Marvel Zombies 3 came out with a clear, we're going to do a fourth one, and this follows, you know, right on the heels kind of thing. Little disappointing.
Yeah, it's like, I don't need to get another Marvel Zombies series. Walking Dead was good.
Yeah, it's always good. I mean, that's no surprise.
Terror Titans and Secret Six were good, I thought.
Yeah, I particularly enjoyed Terror Titans. That was one that I didn't go in with high expectations of, but it continues to please me greatly. You know, again, having Static show up and well used, very happy with that.
I loved the War of Kings one shot.
That was good. Some of the stuff they're doing with the Inhumans there is cool.
They did some really cool stuff in that, and it got me, I mean, I'm not going to buy all the X-Men crossovers, but if they do the War of Kings, well, if, when they do the War of Kings miniseries, based on the strength of this one, I don't know who's going to be writing it, but if, who wrote this? Abnett and Lanning, right?
I don't have it in front of me, so I'm not sure.
I believe so, but I'll be getting it. I'll be getting it if these guys are writing it.
Sword was good.
Yeah.
But that one's always good. Definitely some good stuff this time around.
Oh, we got Shrugged number 8 after, like, how long since issue 7 came out?
Oh, wow.
At least a year. At least a year.
Possibly even longer than that. Jeez.
This was ordered in January of 07, 2 years ago.
How come that wasn't canceled? I don't get that.
I don't know, but the order code on this is January 07.
Okay, let me see if I can pull up on my website. I've got a thing where I can search the diamond shipments. Shrug number 7 came out on December 28th, 2007. 6 came out about 4 months earlier. 5 came out about 5 months before that. This thing has just had a
little over a year since the last issue of it.
Yeah.
I was just about ready to send an email in saying, can you cancel Shrugged 8? I don't think it's ever going to come out. And it was like the oldest thing that I had on order, you know, for that January 07 date, you know, from so long ago. And then it showed up on the shipping list. And I'm like, okay, well, I guess it is going to, don't air anymore, but it is going to come out.
Yeah, that's insane for it to be that late. And the first issue, it had a zero issue, but the first issue, a number one, came out on June 14th, 2006. So for 2.5 years later to be up to issue 8, it's like, damn, that's bad.
But at least they finished what they started. It might be 2 years later, but...
Have you read it?
I have not.
Because maybe they just, you know, stopped what they started. They may not have finished.
This is really at the bottom of the stack because it's been so long. I really, truly, I don't remember what was going on. I don't really have the stamina to dig out those issues from so long ago. And, you know, I'll read through it, but I have very low expectations.
Well, any story momentum that thing would have had, and it wouldn't have had much due to the previous delays, it's shot to hell after a year. You know, part of what's working so well for me with Trinity is it's a weekly story. So it's able to maintain that momentum, you know, a lot easier than some other books on either a monthly schedule or a quarterly schedule. And much less a yearly one? Forget it. That's ridiculous.
But they did come out with the 3 different covers for it, so you have that.
Wow, that's very nice of them.
I will say that if you take all the different covers of Shrugged, you can have a different cover for every month over that
probably they did a lot of variant covers. But when they do that sort of a thing, and when they do the $3.99 number ones for 22 pages over at Marvel and stuff, all they're doing is milking the gimmick and draining the power out of it. And they're going to find that these variant covers are going to not be as effective. They're going to find the overpriced number ones are not going to be as effective. And to me, that all falls into the category of bad profits. You're making some money now, but it's going to cost you in the long term.
I'm flipping through it, and the last page ends with the end question mark. And my answer to that question is, well, it's the end for me.
Yes.
I will never pick up a Shrugged comic again. As much as I liked or disliked it, their complete inability to put this out on a timely basis has killed their credibility with me. And then that's followed up with a full page Wizard World LA ad, special tribute to Stan Lee. And Wizard World LA, for people who have not been online, has subsequently been canceled by Wizard.
Oh, so that's for this year's Wizard LA, not last year's?
Oh, yeah. Wizard World LA, March 13th through 15th, 2009. But
wow, they at least updated the ads. That's good.
Don't believe this ad, because there is not going to be a Wizard World LA in March of 2000.
Yeah. So anything else, or is that it?
I think that's it.
Cool. Cool.
Join us next week when we discuss Faces of Evil Prometheus number 1 from DC, Captain Britain and MI-13 number 9 from Marvel, and Love and Capes number 9 from Miracle Press.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.